And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 834. Continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We head to Denver, Colorado, the Colorado Rockies, a team we love to focus on hitting and love to fade the pitching more often than not, and usually tends to work. So we'll talk about the rosters as usual. And in order to help me break down the Colorado Rockies is a fine gentleman that's been willing to do this for multiple years now to preview the Rockies. You can find him. He's basically the lead prospect guy at PitcherList, at Fantrax. There's probably better definitions. I apologize for what the actual job titles are, but he's high up the ladder on both categories at PitcherList and Fantrax when it comes to the writing and prospect game. You can find him on Twitter at Heckman_Matt115. Matt Heckman, how we doing, my friend?
I'm good. This is what, year three with the Rockies, or is it four? I've lost track a little bit.
I've lost track too. I think I've been doing the previews for 4 years. I can't remember if I've had you all four. I know three for sure. I can't remember because you're so kind to fill in or either start with me or fill in after the first year. I honestly don't remember.
No, but I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Excited to talk about the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, before we get going, I kind of butchered your because you do so much. Like, I see you tweeting articles on, like, you and Martin are doing all the PitcherList prospect stuff. I know you're doing a bunch of other stuff. So why don't you let everybody know what you have going on so it'll sound much more elegant than what my mash was.
Yeah, so I am the lead dynasty manager over at PitcherList. So I'm in charge pretty much of organizing the content that we put out, different lists, different article series, off season. It really never stops for us. So we're getting even more, ramping up a little bit. In January, we did all of the top prospects, top 20 dynasty prospects for each team came out on PitcherList. There's an article for each one breaking down the top 20, giving insight. Now, as we shift toward the regular season, we'll have some spring training content. We've got dynasty projections. That's a little fun series we've been doing. Looks at a ceiling and a floor in terms of fantasy value for each of the top prospects at each hitting position. So I took shortstop, so I got to give a ceiling comp for like Connor Griffin, JJ Weatherholt. Really fun series, gives you a little bit of fantasy insight into what those guys are doing. Then we'll have prospect rankings, all kinds of stuff getting ready for the regular season. I actually stepped away from Fantrax this year. That's okay. No, schedule got, I wish I could have said I really enjoyed writing for Fantrax. It was a nice balance between dynasty and regular season content, but schedule got too busy, so I had to step away at least for this year. Maybe I'll go back at some point.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense though, because like I don't know how you did both. I wasn't kidding. It's either you and Martin either have an article every day, like one of you or both of you every single day. It feels like I see it tweeted all over the place out of Nick's account there. So yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense as well. All right, let's talk Rockies, Colorado Rockies. Like I said, like, you know, for fantasy, there's still a lot of goodness involved in this team. Obviously, we're going to have some good stuff to talk about there. But I guess my first question to you is, I know you're not a Rockies fan, but just in a nutshell, I guess, how do you think the Rockies season went in 2025? Because it was challenging the White Sox for a while there.
Yeah, it was bad. I felt like after 2024, there was maybe a glimmer of hope, right? I think Tovar broke out in 24, Doyle broke out. You had some young guys coming up. You hoped they could pick up the slack. You had Chase Dolander getting ready to pitch. So I think there was a little bit of optimism last year, and it went from not good to terrible. It was about as bad as it could have been, I think, last year.
I'm with you. Now we got new coaching, all kinds of stuff there. And it's been a young team, still pretty young, so we'll get right to it here. Let's start it off with Hunter Goodman. This is definitely one of the bright spots on this team. We were talking about him last year because he came off of that huge, you know, like kind of debut in 2024, over 70 games, saw 13 homers. Like, it wasn't huge, but there was a lot of optimism is what I'm trying to say. He shattered that optimism, like just blew it out of the water with 31 home runs last year. So now you got to kind of decide is this the hitter Hunter Goodman is? And not so much the power, but the average, the lower strikeout rate, all that good stuff. And his ADP is like around 65, 70 over the last week. So you don't get a discount on him if you like him. What are your thoughts on Goodman now entering his second full season with the Rockies?
Yeah, well, first off, if you hear a lot of crinkling in the background, my cat has decided to join us for the podcast. And so she's
more the merrier.
Goodman, yeah, I don't think I was in on Goodman last year when we talked about the Rockies. He's not a profile I generally like, and I wasn't super optimistic they would play him at catcher. And so I think that affected my long-term outlook for him, and they seem pretty committed to giving him a leash at catcher. It helps, I guess, when you don't really have anybody else to give the job to. He was great last year, and I feel like, again, I went into this year, you put together that outline, all the hitters we were talking about, I was kind of filling it in. My first gut reaction that I filled everything in with, I was like, I don't like Hunter Goodman. It's just not a profile I think I tend to like. A lot of chase, a lot of whiff. You're really reliant on power there. And then I like started to look and I scouted him out and I was like, maybe he is better than I think just because of all that power he produces at catcher.
Yeah. No, the catching power, I think, is what gets the Goodman love. And like I said, last year he like surprisingly, is he at 190? We saw the strikeouts in that small 2024 sample. Like 70 games, I guess it's not that small, but rather small. We saw him at 278. Strikeout still 26%, but that's a 2% increase. Like we saw better skills is what's interesting. So, and he played 144 games. That's the other caveat. Like at a catching position, that's a ton of plate appearances. So you got to kind of pick your poison. I guess like the hard part I like Hunter Goodman. Like for the power, I love Hunter Goodman. So to your point, that might make him worth it all right there. Like he's like Salvi Perez type. Like this is what he is. My question is like, do we see a middle between the 190 and the 278? Or is like which one that's where you don't have the answer. But I'm just saying like that's where I struggle with trying to figure out who he is because he's still young. He'll be 26. It's not like he's been doing this for a long time either.
Yeah, I think when I said I came to 260 with 29.5 homers. And so that was kind of where I landed. It was interesting. Last September, what's the number? He struck out 23.4%. And I was like, oh, maybe he made some adjustments at the plate. It was really just he's so aggressive. And he's aggressive at everything, good or bad. It doesn't matter whether the pitch is 6 inches out of the zone or right down the middle. He's going to swing at it. And so, I don't know, pitchers were just making more mistakes. I didn't have the time to really dive into all of that. But the chase rate did not get any better. The approach was the same. He just made more zone contact, and that kind of drove his strikeout rate down a little bit. So, I don't know how sustainable that is moving forward.
That's a great. That's like the conundrum we had for like Javi Baez for years, and then it finally ran out. It's like, so, like, you could be aggressive, and if you're making the contact, obviously, Yahtzee, but if he stays that aggressive and maybe they stop throwing it in the zone so much, like,
right. They're like, wait, why am I doing that? I can just throw it out of the zone and he's going to swing at it. That sounds like a better idea.
Let me look at the rest of this Rockies lineup. Should we be pitching to Hunter Goodman?
It's like, I don't know. I feel like as I scouted him, I came to be like, he's not being drafted unfairly. Like, I don't think it's unreasonably high. Just when I look at who's going around him, like, I just see myself going in a different – attacking a different position. Like Jackson Merrill goes right after him in ADP. You got Joe Ryan, George Kirby, Jaron Duran, Austin Riley, Riley Green. Like obviously in a two-catcher league, you kind of feel the need to get a catcher there. But I just feel like they're – I like so Bryce Terang's going right ahead of him if he falls a little bit. There are just so many other players I like more than Hunter Goodman that I don't know if I love the ADP, even if he is a fine value at catcher.
Yeah, and I'll be very honest. I have not taken Hunter Goodman yet this year. It's not so much a slight to Goodman. It's probably more sort of what you're discussing there of how I build my rosters and what I'm taking in that range usually doesn't involve a Hunter Goodman. Like if I go early catcher, I usually go towards the top of the early catchers type thing, and then or I'll wait a little farther is how it usually goes for me.
Totally agree.
All right, let's talk Brenton Doyle because this is a guy I am a huge fan of, and he had a lot going on last year on and off the field. So I'm really curious to get your thoughts on Doyle. We saw 23-30 in 2024 while hitting 280. Last year we saw 15 homers, 18 steals while hitting 233. So obviously a step back, been well documented. ADP is around 165-ish over the last week or so. What is your thoughts on Doyle entering this year? Because last year you had to pay almost a top 100 price after that big season. Now you're talking mid 160. You're talking like 150 to 175 probably.
Yeah, like you said, he just had so much going on. I mean, the personal issues early in the year and then the shoulder injury in the middle of the year, you wonder if that impacted his power output or anything like that. It really just kind of felt like a lost, It's hard to say a lost season when he played 138 games. Like, I feel like you usually say a lost season. Like, we're going to talk about Tovar in a few minutes, and I feel like that's easier to say, oh, you chalk it up to a lost season. He didn't even have 100 games. But I really just felt like a lost season for Doyle. I think 2 years ago, we hit on Doyle and we said, oh, Doyle is going really late. He's got the center field job, a lot of speed, a lot of power, and then he broke out. And it was like, oh, we nailed that pick. Last year we said, ah, Doyle's going a little bit too high. I don't know about his draft price. We nailed that again. He didn't do well. So I feel like a lot of pressure is on us for year three. Outfield, I think it's a fair price. I think you can look at who's going around him. He's sandwiched between Chandler Simpson and Stephen Kwan. I would definitely take him over Chandler Simpson. I think I'd definitely take Stephen Kwan over Brenton Doyle just for stability. At that point, I guess it depends on team build. He definitely was unlucky last year, 289 BABIP there. The power was still good. I don't know if he ever gets to 30 homers, but you figure he probably hits close to 20. He has a good chance to go 20-20. He's probably going to hit like 240, 245. I don't think it's an unfair price to take Brenton Doyle. Like, I like him a lot more than the guys going ahead of him looking at the list. I mean, Rafaela, Nimmo, Marcy, Simpson. It's kind of like the Hunter Goodman thing. I just don't know if I'm really targeting Brenton Doyle.
Yeah, and you know, because I like him over all those guys you mentioned as well. I think for me, and I like Doyle a lot also, I think we're on the same page on this one. It's the team build for me. It's like I used to take so many homers and steals early. I'm not opposed to taking Doyle when it comes to him. But it's like at that point in the draft, do I maybe need to be more aggressive in pitching or do I need more aggressive in X, Y, or Z is what it comes down to. If I feel like I'm pretty solid everywhere, like I will probably definitely draft Brenton Doyle and add him to the squad because I think all he does is help you. It doesn't hurt you in this scenario. But yeah, it was just interesting last year because the off-field stuff, then he got hurt. You mentioned the kind of unlucky. Look at all the you know, estimators, your X stats and everything else under the sun. He definitely underachieved if you look at things. So, like, even the BABIPs, you name it, it was not great for Brenton Doyle in those regards. And he actually kind of got better towards the end of the season. Like, you saw a little bit of it coming around. So, that gives me a little maybe blind hope in that one as well. But, yeah, I'm a Doyle fan as well.
Yeah, I like him.
All right, you mentioned Ezekiel Tovar, and I'm glad you did because the more I've dug in on players this offseason, it's like – it'd be easy to go, wow, he hit 9 home runs and stole 5 bases and hit 253. Like, oh, this guy, what happened? And then first you see 95 games. Okay, so he was probably playing hurt before he actually left went on the IL. I also see he's going to be 24. Extremely young. Extremely young when we look at a player like this. And we're talking about a player, Matt, that last year we were drafting much higher because we saw a lot of power, a little bit of speed. ADP right now over like the last 7 days is around 185. He's fluctuated between like 150 and 200 throughout draft season. What are your thoughts on Tovar this year? Was it just an injured season and we'll bounce it back? Or is there anything that kind of stood out as a glaring concern?
So I think I went in to prep for this thinking, I like Tovar. I think he's a good value. He was drafted way too low in 2024. Way too high in 2025, same as Brenton Doyle. Maybe this is just right. Maybe it's a good value. Like you said, he's only 24 years old. He had 26 home runs a year ago. He plays elite shortstop defense out there, so I'm not worried about him ever losing playing time. He gets to play in cores. And then I dove in, and it's just, yes, he was injured last year, but the same things that were a problem last year were really an underlying problem, I feel like, in 2024, even when he broke out. He chases more than Hunter Goodman. He whiffs more than Hunter Goodman. Like, he has terrible plate discipline. And so, I mean, you make up for that with speed and power. And I feel like when you have such a low batting average floor or strikeout risk, you almost need both. Sometimes, like, I feel like we talked about Doyle, and it's like he can go 20-20. He's going to hit and he's going to run. Tovar's got the power. He's got the pop. He pulls the ball in the air really well, but he doesn't run. Like, the sprint speed isn't great. And what, he stole five? He went 5 for 8 last year, 6 for 11 the year before. Like, those aren't stolen base. It's not even totals, not even stolen base rates that look good. If you're playing an on-base percentage league, like, that walk rate's going to kill you. Really, the only positives are power. Like, I do think he's got 20 to 25 home run power, and he hits a ton of line drives. Like, the swing is consistent enough to give you some stability in batting average. Like, I don't ever see him, even with the poor plate discipline, hitting below, like, 240, 245 over a full season. So, you know, he's not going to hit 200, but I don't think you could ever project him to hit 280 either with that skill set.
And that's like something you mentioned there for me when it comes to shortstop. I prefer to walk away with speed at the shortstop position, because we'll talk, you know, corner infielders, or you'll talk catchers, for instance, and you're not getting much in those spots. Like, so you kind of need your middle infield and your outfield to bring it home, and at shortstop especially. Like, there's so many, like, 20 plus steal guys, at least 15 plus. Like, you're leaving with something in the bag. So that's always kind of turned me off on Tovar. But, like, I see his ADP this year, and I'm thinking, okay, could he hit 250 plus? Could he hit 20 plus home runs? Can he get me at least maybe sneak in the 10 steals? Like, could we get there? It's a lot of what ifs. I get it. A lot of what ifs. So I'm not, like, aggressive on Tovar. I think I have, like, one share. I think in auction leagues, he's actually very affordable. It was, like, $4 or $5. Like, it wasn't much. So that's one of those where if you want to budget accordingly, it fits. But when you're talking, like, a snake draft, he doesn't usually fit the mold of what I'm looking for, so I pass him along. But I see his price this year, and at least it seems much more palatable than it has in recent seasons. So, like, I've always tried to be, I don't want to – there are guys I have on do not draft list. I'm not going to deny that. But I try to tell myself I should at least have an open mind, like, everyone, the price is right type situation. On most, there's still some reason just to not take guys. That's for sure. But Tovar, I just kind of – I'm always the sucker. Like, this is why you prospect guys, I give you guys so much credit, because I'm always the sucker going, he's young, he can change. I got, like, it's a broken person, but you guys actually watch the skills. I just look at the, hey, you know, there's something there.
We'll yeah, I mean, there is definitely something there. You just wonder, like, looking at ADP. ADP. Yeah. Sorry. Do a lot of ATP stuff at my job. Authorization to proceed. So ADP, mixing up. Colson Montgomery goes 15 picks later. If you're talking about somebody with power and some batting average risk, strikeout risk, I think Colson Montgomery has more power there. I mean, you look all the way down, nearly 60 picks later, Carlos Correa. He's not going to – if you assume Tovar isn't going to start stealing bases at a high clip, you're sacrificing stolen bases. You might as well go get Correa, who could hit 15 to 20 home runs with much better batting average. Like, I feel like I struggle to find the mold where I'm like, yes, Tovar is what I'm chasing, because I think there's more upside later, and I think there's also more floor later. And so it's like Tovar just kind of finds himself in no man's land almost.
It's totally fair. Let's talk Jordan Beck. I love the first statement you have here, because I was going to ask you the same question and you already nailed it. Jordan Beck has a profile that is tempting. Obviously, another prospect that kind of took a little bit, like his first cup of coffee, 3 homers, 7 steals at .188 in 2024. But last year, over pretty much a full season, we saw 16 homers, 19 steals at .258. Signs of life. There's also a lot of concern, I get, and that's what you're going to go over here. But, like, I'll ask you right out the gate, because you wrote it down here, is we look at this potential 2020 profile, which he's done in the minors. And his ADP is sitting closer. It's like 230 to 250. This seems like a similar profile to a Britton Doyle going later in drafts. I'll just leave that there, and you can run with Jordan Beck however you'd like.
I really like Jordan Beck. I've taken a lot of Jordan Beck in drafts because, I mean, I wrote it. You just said it. Britton Doyle, 60 picks later. Like, you get that upside, you're able to wait a few rounds after you would have to take Doyle. It's the same situation, right? I mean, Jordan Beck is solid defensively. It's not quite the same because Doyle's so elite out there in center. You don't worry about the playing time as much if the bat struggles. But Jordan Beck is solid enough in center. He's got really good raw power. He's got really good speed. The game power is coming. It's not fully there, but he pulls the ball in the air a decent amount. He gets to enough barrels. The max EVs are there enough as well. And he doesn't chase quite as much as Brandon Doyle. I'm struggling to speak tonight. He doesn't chase quite as much. And so I do think that helps. a player's just stability. You're able to get more pitches in the zone. You get more pitches to hit. There's not an easy out for a pitcher where you're going to bail them out. And so Doyle, he only chases 27.4% of the time. That was down significantly from that small sample in 2024. The whiff rate also improved over 3%. Like, again, small sample in 2024. He only played in 55 games. But I think there's room for growth there. I think there could be an 8% walk rate, maybe a like 26, 27% strike. What do the projections have? 27. They're like 27 to 28 and a half-ish. Like, I think there's room to get into that like 26-ish range, 25 at a ceiling. You walk a little bit more. The home runs come. You get to 20 homers. The speed is really, really good. I think you could get the 25 if they're aggressive on the bases this year. You could push 30 stolen bases. And he's at a really affordable draft price. Like, some of the players in 2025 felt like we were drafting Doyle and Tovar at their ceilings versus, like, now they've fallen down boards a little bit. I don't think Jordan Beck is going anywhere near his ceiling right now.
I love it because I have circled Beck. I convinced my co-host Ryan Bloomfield and Bubba in the Bloom. Like, against he was kind of like, ah, no. And then we talked about him on an outfield preview. And I'm like, this guy's better than I think you think, especially at the price. The price is what really sets it off for me. Like, you know, even if he doesn't do any better, if he gives me what he did last year at that ADP, I feel like I'm winning already. Like, we're good. Not winning the league, but winning, like, that pick is what I'm trying to say.
Winner, yeah. You heard it here first.
League winner, Jordan Beck. Yep. But I fully agree with you. I think there's a whole nother, like, potential level to this ball player. Like, I want to call him a kid because he is a kid to me, but yeah, I think there's a lot to like with Jordan Beck. So it's good to hear another, like you've followed him since when he was, because we talked about him a couple years worth on this show before he really came to be last year. So that's good to hear you're still on that path. Mickey Moniak, guy, former number one overall draft pick for the Phillies, took a long time to get going, but last year, 24 homers, 9 steals, hit 270 with the Rockies in 135 games. Easy to say a career season for Moniak, but some of the skills supported it, Matt, which is pretty good to see. And he'll be in a primary platoon role once again this season. His ADP is around 250. What are your thoughts on Mickey Moniak? Again, career year, so maybe it was great, but some of it was backed up.
Yeah, I mean, it was really frustrating being a fan of the team that drafted Moniak at number one, and he was a huge bust for years, and then we traded him, and he was still a bust. And then now all of a sudden he hit 24 homers with a 110 WRC plus. Like, that's the thing. Like, we want these prospects to just be slam dunk home runs as soon as they step foot at the major league level. And too often they're not afforded the runway. I feel like Moniak was. I mean, this was his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That was his 6th season last year. He didn't make the Angels roster. He had to go to the Rockies. And then all of a sudden he gets another opportunity and he finds a home. The thing that's interesting is I feel like in 2023 and 2024, there were times where you were picking Mickey Moniak up on the waiver wire. I mean, he hit 280 with 14 homers in 2023. He was quietly very good when he played. And then in 2024, I feel like there were at least a couple of times during the season where he went on some hot streaks and you were adding Moniak. And now he just kind of put it all together. Even when he was on those hot streaks like 2023, he struck out 35% of the time. Very clearly, he's not going to hit 280 again. Then in 2024, that lowered to 27.3. 2025, all the way down to 23.9. Like, if he can just stay in that 25 range, even if he regresses a little bit, there are skills there. Whiff rate got better. Zone contact rate got better. Led to a lower strikeout rate. The batted ball data is still really, really good. I mean, if you look at his Savant page, expected slugging in the 90th percentile in all of baseball. Good barrel rate, good sweet spot percentage. Really, the only issue with Moniak is he's not going to play against lefties, right? He had a 54 WRC plus against lefties. Even on a bad team, I don't think they would leave him out there against lefties. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the new ownership, new coaching will just, like, let him see what he has. But he's 27 at this point. I don't think they're going to – he's going to be 28 in May. I don't think they're going to let him just hang out there. So you have to get Moniak in a league where – daily lineups, he has a lot more value. Places where you can have a bench bat, and then you can flip in him. And maybe it's you take two outfielders back to back and you take two lefties. I heard Eno Saris talking about it on his podcast the other day. Like, there's a range where you just take two lefty outfielders and you just kind of mix and match them in your lineups when you can. Like, I think you could get away with that with Moniak. I think he's got value. It's just if you're in a weekly lineup league, like, you're not going to play him when he's not at home, probably. You're not going to play him against lefties. And so you run into this, how much value does he really have?
No, and that's the biggest thing is he will be, it's rather strict platoon. Yeah, it'll be very few and far between you see him versus a left-handed pitcher. And Eno's idea is perfect. If you can make it work based on your roster construction sizes, like it's a great plan because most weeks you're going to see four or five righties out of a six or seven game week. So you'll get plenty of playing time out there between the two. And Moniak, like we joke on our shows, we call it Platoonsville. When you get through the ADP, eventually you're in the world of platoon drafting at that point. And he's one of the better platoon guys, to your point, like talking about what he did last year. Like he's a great platoon option to have. You just have to build the roster appropriately as well, like you were saying.
Yeah, it's like I think I prefer Trent Grisham's going right after him. I think I would probably prefer Grisham. I mean, because the other thing with Moniak, I pulled up his splits. He hit .230 away from Coors. He hit .303 yes. at Coors. And so, like, if you're not going to play him against lefties and you're not going to play him on the road probably, that really limits how often Moniak's actually in your lineup.
It's a great point because that was a point of contention a lot last year of like streaming him. It's like, well, they're facing five righties in six games, but they're all on the road.
Yeah.
So I was like, do you really want to go that direction? And that was and on paper, Grisham should play almost every day like he did last year.
Right.
So good point on that. All right. Slick Willie Castro is a new member of the Colorado Rockies. It was a down year a bit for Willie compared to previous seasons. 11 homers, 10 steals at .226. He can play all over the diamond. He's not going to light the fantasy world on fire, probably, but for a Rockies team, he's going to help out in real-life baseball probably a decent amount. We'll see. Who knows? ADP is around 270, though, so you're not paying a premium for a guy that's flexible all over the place. So what's your take on Willie Castro, new member of the Rockies?
I think he's a fine pick in deeper leagues because of that versatility you mentioned. Like, when you start getting into leagues where having multi-positional eligibility is important, I think he is a fine pick. Like you said, he's probably going to play every day, whether that's at third base or whether that's in a super utility role. And he just kind of plays all over because the Rockies have a lot of holes in their lineup. I think that's possible. He's got some speed, but the stolen base totals after 2023 have really dropped off. 14 for 23 in 2024, 10 for 14 in 2025. In 2024, he played all the time. He played 158 games, and he still only stole 14 bases. So I don't know. I don't think you can project the 33 steals that we saw in 2023. I think you're looking at a ceiling of 15. Like, a lot of projections, I have him at 15. I think that's probably the highest I would ever project for him. He doesn't do a whole lot well. I mean, he doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't barrel it up. He does not make a lot of contact. He chases a lot. So it's really an underwhelming profile. If I'm in like a 12-team league or leagues that I know I have waiver wires that I can play, like, I don't want Willie Castro, even if he's going to play a lot.
Yeah, like last year I was kind of interested in the profile. Then going through it last year, it's like I got dropped him pretty much everywhere by midseason. I think he's a much more of a real life play than a fantasy play for most of us. Another new member of the Colorado Rockies, Jake McCarthy, came over from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Playing time has been an issue throughout his career between injuries and his minor league deployments. But when he has plenty of playing time, he can usually hit for a good average. But one thing he can do, and I'm very confident in saying, could run wild. Like, Jake McCarthy can do that in bunches. And Coors is a BABIP haven, so this could play into his skills. We'll see. But ADP is outside of 400. It's like 400 to 425. What's your thoughts on McCarthy, who I think he's at least in the strong side of platoon, might get even more playing time for the Rockies?
Yeah, I have not been a fan of McCarthy, I feel like, for years now, and I feel like I am still on that boat. Coors is a BABIP haven, but he hits the ball on the ground so much. I mean, infield is an infield at the end of the day. Like, there's only so much much room on the infield. It's not like he's a line drive guy or even a fly ball guy, and some more of those fly balls are going to drop. He hits the ball on the ground and relies on speed, and that's not going to change, I don't really think. Of course, he does not hit the ball hard. He chases a lot, too. He doesn't whiff, so he makes weak contact. Like, it's not like he's swinging at good pitches there. And so the whiff rate is fine, but I'd almost rather him whiff more on bad pitches. Like, it's so easy to look at whiff rate. Sometimes you're like, oh, well, he makes a lot of contact. And it's like, that's great, but pitchers want you to make contact on some pitches. Like, some pitchers pitch to contact. That's a strategy that they have, and McCarthy fits right into that. So, yeah, with regular playing time, I mean, if you missed on stolen bases early, I don't mind it. I think he should get fairly regular playing time until they want to see what Zach Veen has again, or Sterling Thompson and some of these other guys we'll talk about later. I think once they start wanting to see what they have, you see that playing time for McCarthy kind of fall out potentially, because he owns a 96 WRC plus, and over the last three seasons, his career, it's a 90 WRC plus. Like, I don't know. If you need speed, he's a fine pick that late. Like you said, he's going really late, but I don't care for him.
Yeah, he's a DC play for me, as for the depth aspects of it. I've never targeted him in my life, to your point. And I love the point you also made, because I was guilty of it just now, but everyone associates Coors with Babbitt, but you flat out said an infield's an infield, because it's a great point. He doesn't spray it all over the yard. Or like other players, like, I joke with, you know, as a Giants fan, I wasn't pumped on Luis Urias coming to San Francisco, but he's a hitter that can maybe take advantage of triples alley more than others. Like, so it could actually play for him, where, to your point about Jake McCarthy, probably doesn't matter where you put him, what ballpark, I mean, and it's going to be similar outcomes. He could prove us wrong. We'll see, but it's a great
flashed point. It before. He's hit for good average, like you've said before. I don't know. I think it's very luck dependent in his profile.
Well, like, just for like, I'll just, let me pull his page back up real quick, because, yeah, he's hit over 280 twice, but with McCarthy, it's interesting. Even in those seasons, if we're talking like just power numbers, the years he hits 280, his ISO is 143 and 115. For those that don't know what ISO stands for, the easiest like layman's term, it's a showcase of power. It's isolated power, basically, is what it comes down to. So one, like, average, like, you want to be minimum 100. Like, it's just like what you want. You prefer to be much higher, is what I'm saying. So like a 115 average while hitting over 280, or 115 ISO while hitting over 280.
That's really bad.
Not doing much. That's a lot of that's a lot of worm burning base hits, is what that comes down to.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk Edward Julian. Again, we're at the bottom part of the lineup, so it's a little murkier. But Julian came over from the Twins, three homers last year. He had 8 and 6 the year before, hit 220 last year. In the bigs, Julian hasn't done much. I was surprised when I dug into him for like a news column I was doing when the transaction was made. Like, looking throughout the minors, we actually saw some decent power early in his minor career. We saw speed throughout there. We haven't seen it at all at the big league level, so I'm not saying it's going to transition. I was just surprised to see it. His ADP is almost 500. He's going free as heck. Second base, he can play first base. I'm not interested in Edward Julian, but maybe I should be. Enlighten me on what we're seeing here.
No, well, what did I write? I said, no, don't fall for it again. That was my note. That was my. Now, he's fine. If you're in a deep league, he's basically free. Like you said, like, he's going for nothing. If you want to take a shot, but he barrels the ball up a lot. He always has. He doesn't pull the ball in the air. He hits a lot of line drives. He's also just runs high strikeout rates. Like, he doesn't chase, and he doesn't really whip. He doesn't really swing. I think that's the issue, is swing rate's 7% below the league average. It's like he just wants to work walks and take it from there, and so he strikes out a lot. I don't know. I don't care. I don't think they're going to give him a super long leash. I think it was like, we'll take a flyer on him, play him for 2 months while we let Charlie Condon, oh my gosh, get some service time down in the minors. And then we'll call him up to play first base, maybe. I mean, they have Julian listed as a second base. And so maybe they could play him there. I know he's played a lot of first base, I feel like, recently. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm kind of out.
Yeah, it's like they have Adele Amador, who your buddy Martin's not a huge fan of either. So, like, it's funny. They make all these moves. They have a ton of, like, at least serviceable outfielders. They haven't really addressed the right side of their infield. It's a real murky spot. And, like, Willie's technically the third baseman, so I don't know if they've really addressed that side either. But, yeah, first base, that'll lead us to this. They have Troy Johnston and Blanton Crim technically in a platoon before Charlie Condon eventually gets called up, to your point. That's like – because I'm very interested in the Troy Johnston profile just for the fact his ADP is like 460. Don't like I'm not running to play him. Let me clarify that real quick on that. But what I see when I look at his profile is, okay, at that ADP, which is great, you see a guy that went 26-24 in a couple years ago in the minors. We've seen a like decent power, ton of speed throughout the minors, pretty good batting average. So I'm like, okay, that's a little appealing. Blanton Crim, I wrote way too much about for the Rangers in a playing time tomorrow. Tons of power, no plate discipline whatsoever. Like it's basically Michael Toglio all over again, it feels like. So how do you see this first base playing out? Anything fantasy relevant there? And then if like we're gonna probably talk about Condon later. If you want to throw him in now just to kind of get it over with, you're more than welcome to as well.
Yeah, I do think there was more value here than I realized, I think, when I looked at the names and I see them in drafts and I'm like, I don't really want either of them. Why would I draft either of them? But there are like, it's an interesting profile for both as far as just like batted ball data. Like they can both get to power. They both like have substantial pop. I think you mentioned Troy Johnston with his speed. Like, yes, he's stolen bases in the minors. No, I don't see that translating to major league stolen bases. Like, sometimes minor league steals can be a little deceiving. And I think even if he has good baseball instincts, right, like even if you don't have to be the fastest, Josh Naylor stole 30 bases or something last year. Like, I guess you don't have to be the fastest, but he went 2-for-4 last year at the major league level. I don't think he gets over 10 this next year. If that's with regular playing time, assuming Troy Johnston plays every day. I think Johnson is the one you take a shot at, probably just because strong side platoon, right? He's going to play against the righties in theory. Crim will play against the lefties. I like Crim's batted ball data more. I think there's more actual game power there. And so, like, you put that in cores. Like, they both I could talk myself into at the end of drafts, I think, taking either one, even though I know neither one is going to be the starter probably on June 1st.
Yeah, by June 1st. Okay, that's where I was wondering where we were going there, because that's what other people have told me when I, like, in my our Bubba in the Bloom Discord, I'll sit there and be like, yeah, this profile, like, it's intriguing at the price and a draft champions. Like, what can we get? You know, going through kind of the motions you went through early on talking about both of them.
Yeah.
But then everyone, the first thing most say is, well, Charlie Condon's taking a job. And I'm like, Okay, when? You're the first person to at least roughly put a timetable on that for me. I'm like, yeah, I know he's taking their job. I'm not foolish, but like, can I get 3 months, 4 months? Like, yeah. What am I getting out of them?
I feel like it's hard because it's the Rockies too, and you're like,
100%, great point.
What do you do with their prospects? I have no idea. And now it's new ownership and new coaching, and so it's like, well, how are they going to treat prospects now? Do they want to take this old regime and all their picks and just see what they have? In that case, I feel like Condon probably gets up early. Like, I think June 1st is realistic. I feel like 2025, his whole professional career has been so weird. It was like the value was so low, and then he got hurt, and the value went even lower, and then he came back, and he was really good in high A, but he was coming out of college, and so does that really translate? And then the batting average got worse. Like, I think there is hit tool risk with him, but also I think the power is really, really good, and he gets to his pull side well. He hits a lot of line drives. And so it's like a good, like, it's a very enticing fantasy profile. And he's got so much more potential than Johnson and Crim that I don't really see any way he's not up by the middle of the season.
All right. Here's my question then for people that might still be doing like a draft and hold format, like a deep, deep, deep format, 50 rounds type deal. Would you rather go after a Johnson at 460, a Crim at 640? Or a Condon at 540. So Condon's in the middle of them. Because obviously a draft and hold, you're not doing any fab. You're rolling all year with these guys. Which one would you prefer to draft if you're doing that right now?
Crim. I think he gives you the best, like, Johnson was just a little bit higher. I mean, that's like 200 picks, you said, I think, in difference in ADP. And so I'd rather, if they're both, I mean, what, I probably think Johnson has a 60% chance to win the majority of plate appearance is coming out of spring, and Krim's at 40. So I'll take, for 20%, I'll take Krim 200 picks later. And in a draft and hold where you're not making any moves, I think Condon's up by June. I don't know that. And the Rockies could, he could struggle coming out of the gate, right? He could go to spring, major league camp. He could strike out a ton. Baseball's a mental game. Then he's striking out 35% in AA, AAA. And then they're like, well, we're not going to call him up this year. And then it's like, just wasted a roster spot. Like, I feel like Krim is my pick of the three at those prices.
I love it. See, there's somebody using his brain, using data and numbers, percentages there. Like, I'm just like the caveman. Hey, this guy hit ball hard. Let's take him. Yeah, that's good stuff. Real quick, you could say no to any of this. But like on their bench, they got, you know, and maybe they're, I'll do a quick glance. No, we're good. Braxton Fuller, you have Ryan Ritter, Tyler Freeman on the bench. Anything worth discussing there? Because they're strictly platoons, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, Ritter's got some power. Like, he's shown the power speed in the minor leagues. And so if Willie Castro really struggles or Julian really struggles, which is possible for both, I don't think they'd sit Castro. But if Julian really struggles, which he absolutely could and has in the past, I think they give Ritter another look maybe at second base. Like, he hit 16 homers in AAA last year. He went 24-20 in 2023. The hit tool's bad. So don't expect much average there, but there is, I guess, a glimmer of fantasy appeal in the same way there's fantasy appeal with Jordan Beck and Ezekiel Tovar and Brenton Doyle. Like, you have these power speed guys, you get them to Coors, maybe some luck falls their way, and all of a sudden they're hitting 250 with 2020 upside. So Ritter's the one guy I guess you keep an eye on, that I would say.
Okay, perfect, perfect. I have a soft spot for Fulford as a very, very late pick. God forbid something happens to Goodman, but that's, I'm asking for a lot of ducks to get in a row for that one to work. All right, let's go to the mound. I think last year I feel like I just said, I grouped them all and said, what do you want to talk about, basically, because it's murky, but and it's kind of, it's similar. Don't get me wrong, especially with the recent signings they made. It's just like, what are we doing here? But I'll at least give you the benefit of the doubt if you want to be like pass or like quick little jabs. Like, I'm good with sarcasm to the max here. We'll start with Kyle Freeland because technically he is their veteran grizzled ace. He's just never going to go away. Like, he's one of the few that's like, just pay me a couple $1 million. I'll get shelled once, like all year. It's cool. The funny part to me about Kyle Freeland, so at Bubba in the Blue and Ryan has built an ADP tracker that updates live as drafts go on, and it shows like the most recent 20 drafts. Kyle Freeland's ADP over the last 7 days is 728. He's only been drafted in the last 4 drafts. There's been 16 drafts. He wasn't even drafted. Anything else you'd like to add to the fantasy appeal of Kyle Freeland?
Draft him everywhere. He's going to be great. Cy Young Award is coming for Kyle Freeland. No, I don't want him. He doesn't strike anybody out. No. No, thank you.
Yeah. It's brutal. All right. They've added a lot of people to this rotation, not saying they're quality adds, but they've added them. They've added Michael Lorenzen. He can eat up innings. I'll give him that. He'll have his moments. Like, the funny thing is, I'll say this much, and I'll let you again run. Some of their adds on the road, I'm not a huge, like, I don't mind. Like, I could see some appeal there.
Yeah.
Everybody in Coors is like, nothing, please. What's your thoughts on Lorenzen joining the squad?
Yeah, I think what you said is fair. I think there is some value there. He also posted the highest home run per fly ball rate of his, or home runs per nine of his career last year, and that was in Kansas City before they moved the fences. And so now him going to Coors at 34 years old, I'm not necessarily optimistic that that is going to get any better. So, yeah, Michael Lorenzen in a spot start. I mean, if they're on the road and they're in, I don't know, if they're in Chicago, if they play the White Sox, not the Cubs, I could see Lorenzen being like, yeah, he's a fine streamer. I don't think I would draft him anywhere.
Yeah, he's post 780p. So, yes, that's called streaming for sure. Here's the one that I was slightly interested in. I'll give my reasons why after you discuss. Chase Dolander. Was their big prospect pitcher last year. Obviously, things didn't go great. ERA of over 6.5. He made 21 starts, went to the minors at one point last year. His ADP is about 612 over the last 7 days. What are your thoughts on Chase Dolander entering basically his second season at the big league level?
He's interesting because he has the potential, right? He's got the four seam that sits in the upper 90s. He's got the curveball that generates a lot of whiffs, but he doesn't necessarily command any of his secondaries particularly well. And so he leans on his fastball 48.7% of the time. I mean, that's just a lot of fastball. And if your control isn't pinpoint, you're going to give up a lot of home runs. And he did. I mean, like, he gave up 18 homers in 98 innings last year. It's interesting because 3.46 ERA on the road, 9.98 ERA at home. So, I mean, you could say I'm going to draft him and only play him on the road. I don't hate that strategy. Where is he going in drafts? I didn't.
He's in the last 7 days, he's 612.
So you're getting him basically for free. I mean, I would rather take him than what starters are going around him. Jansen Junk, I think I'd rather take Dolander. River Ryan's going ahead of him. Like, River Ryan is buried on that depth chart.
He doesn't even have a UCL right now. It's still, yeah. Like, he's still rehabbing it.
Eric Lauer is going ahead of him. Richard Fitz. Like, I would rather have Dolander than a lot of these guys. Up until probably, I'm trying to find a point where I'm like, no, I definitely would rather. I'm still going. Omar Rodriguez, like, I don't think he pitches with the Yankees until like July. McAble, yeah. I mean, I'm still going.
No, I'm loving this because this you're proving the point I was trying to keep my mouth shut. I wanted to hear your thoughts first because I'm very excited about the price point with the skills I like.
We're now at like Max Meyer, Dean Kramer, Zach Eflin, Tyler Wells. Like the 540 range, I think, is where I start to be like, okay, I'd rather have those guys probably than – I would rather have those guys than Dolander. But his draft price, that's – I mean, I would take a shot and you just sit him at home and you play him on the road except unless he's in L.A. against the Dodgers.
No, and you nailed it. That's why I saw your notes. I'm like, I'm not going to steal the thunder here, but I've been preaching this. Like, people – I know home road splits or first half, second, like splits are splits, and you know, doesn't mean it's always going to matter. No, with the Rockies, it usually does. Just gonna throw that out there. We can agree on that one. And these were dramatic, like, because that's what you mentioned them. And so, Chase Dolander, I have issues. I draft really early. I've done 11 drafts already.
Okay,
I have him in 7 of my 11. Because I'm taking
that's a lot of investment,
but I'm just like, I'm gonna play him on the road, like, I'm gonna pitch him like 40% of his starts, maybe, and I'm cool with that. Like, that's what I already know. It
gives you a 3.46 ERA and 40% of your starts. That's great value at that point. Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't get chases. That was the other thing. That was the other note I had on him. Like, the curve is just such an outlier pitch when you look at his movement. Like, it's almost like nobody chases his stuff, even though the curve gets a lot of whiffs, and so it's like, he really needs that cutter that he started throwing to kind of bridge the gap between the two. I mean, he does that, though. I think Chase Dolander is a great pick, like you said. That is
awesome. So I just feel like there's not a ton to lose at that point, as long as you play it wisely. Don't start him in Colorado. Keep it simple. I'm just going to group the last two together. Do with it what you wish. Quintana, Sagano, just like Sagano, I don't think he could strike out like the local high school team. and I'm not trying to be mean, but that fastball was just a balloon by the end of the season. So going to Coors isn't going to help anything on those two.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. All right. It's a tradition. Unlike any other folks, we spend a lot of time on hitting, just fly through the pitching. Closing situation, though, there will be saves. There will be saves to be had. We've seen it every year. It goes through a flux. Like, Vodnik was good. He got hurt. It went to a million other people have gotten shots there. Vodnik's healthy for now. He's expected to be the closer. And when we're looking at ADP for Vodnik, again, people just hate pitchers and coolers. Closers are going really high in drafts right now. Vodnik's ADP is 352 over the last 7 days. I get the concerns, but 352 for the quote-unquote closer one right now. Could be foolish still. What are your thoughts on Victor Vodnik?
I like him at his price. I think he's got a really nice price attached. And what's interesting is for him, he pitched a 1.33 ERA at home and a 4.94 on the road. You have to figure that's a small sample reliever and it's going to shift, but maybe there's something in his stuff and however the ball moves at Coors that it just works for him. I don't think the command is great. I don't think I would necessarily bank on him maintaining the job the entire season, but I think he could get 15 to 20-ish saves basically for nothing, like you said. So I think he's a fine pick with where he's going. It's not like he's some like 37-year-old either that you know what you're going to get. He's 26, so there is some unknown there and there's some upside.
What else do you see in the back of that bullpen? Like I said, guys will get saves there. There's always a kind of a hidden gem that comes out of nowhere and at least serves the purpose for a while. So anybody else worth paying attention to in that bullpen?
Yeah, I mentioned Jaden Hill. I don't even think Roster Resource has him projected to make the Rockies, which is kind of surprising to me. He pitched to a, 3.38 ERA in 29.1 innings last year. He was a 44th overall pick back in 2021 out of LSU. I think he kind of just dealt with some injuries early in his career. They moved him into the bullpen. And the stuff is really good. I mean, small samples, but you pull up his Baseball Savant page and there's a lot of red there. I mean, it's a high velocity sinker, change, slider. Slider gets a lot of whiffs. The movements all work really nicely off of each other as well. The fastball kind of goes to the change goes to the slider. And he's in a lot. It's tough to say, like 29 innings. I think he's an electric arm, and I think he's got more closer-esque stuff than Vatnik. I think the control and command's a little bit better too. So I think Jaden Hill could end up being the closer before the end of the season. That's going to be my bold take there.
I love it because, yeah, when I introduced the closing situation, it feels like it's been forever since there's just one guy in Colorado. Like, there's going to be usually three or four by the end of the season, and Vatnik wasn't even the guy last year, but by the end he was. So I'm going to write him down. I'm in the middle of a draft right now, so that'll be something to keep in mind late in draft. What prospects?
I was really surprised. I was looking like Sterling Thompson.
No, real quick. Thompson. Were you looking at other relievers you were talking about? I got you off there.
I got cut out a little bit. I was saying I was surprised Jaden Hill wasn't even listed to make the Rockies because I was looking at that bullpen and I was like, there's nothing here on Roster Resource. And then I scrolled down to their minors. I was like, Jaden Hill, that sounds like a former top pick. And then I looked and I was like, ooh, his profile's intriguing. So just a name.
Beautiful. Love it. What prospects we're looking at here? Because in recent seasons, this was a very young team with a lot of prospects. But as we kind of hinted around as we went through the hitters, they're actually up for once, or they've just moved on from them. So what do we have left to maybe have some fantasy impact this year?
Yeah, Sterling Thompson, former 31st overall pick in 2022. I think he's kind of grown into that prospect fatigue pool. He was a top prospect. He played really, really well in 2023 after he got drafted, showed a lot of tools, power, speed. Well, stolen bases anyway in the minor leagues, good hit tool. And then he kind of fell flat on his face in Double A in 2024. And it seemed like everybody kind of like stepped back and said, oh, he's not going to be any good. And then he responded, hit 296, 18 homers, 12 steals, 20.9% strikeout rate in Triple A last year. So I don't think he necessarily does anything at an elite level. He hits a lot of line drives. It's a smooth, consistent swing. I think his frame, like he's 6'3", 200 pounds. So his frame generates like natural raw power to land in that like 15 to 20-ish home run. Like I said, a lot of line drives. So the BABIP should be really nice in Coors. The hit tool is better. Like he's toned back the aggression a little bit. Only a 27.5% chase rate in AAA last year. Contact rate was 77.3%. So I think there's something to like in his profile. He was drafted as a more like third baseman. He's kind of shifted exclusively to left field at this point. So there is pressure on that bat if they promote him to play. But if you see like Mickey Moniak, for example, if Moniak starts to struggle at some point, I think you could see Sterling Thompson up, or he could even DH at some point on that roster and he could have some fantasy value.
It's not like Jake McCarthy's been the pillar of health either. So
exactly.
There's options there. I like that because just looking at his profile and hearing you talk about him all kind of feels like a slightly cheaper Jordan Beck in a weird way. So in a weird way, maybe that's the wrong comp, but just on the same team, it seems kind of similar.
Yeah.
You wrote down Zach Thien, and I'm glad you did, because I've got a million questions and broken hearts over this one. What are we doing here with Thien? Because he was the talk of the town this time last year. And now, if like you look at draft rooms, you look at conversations, he's either just hated or the forgotten man, depends on what room you're in. But his ADP right now, Matt, it's 615 for a guy that last year was trying to, like, he was inside the top 200, it felt like, at one time. So where are we at on Zach Thien?
I like him at his price. I don't know. It's all projection, but there's so much upside. Like, and you can say there's so much upside, and then people say, oh, well, what has he done in the minor leagues? It's not all what has he done. There's just, like, tools there. Like, he's got the twitchy athleticism kind of thing that you look for in prospects. He has really good speed. So if he played every day, it'd kind of be, I think, Jake McCarthy-esque if he got regular playing time. Like, I think he could seal you 20 to 25 bases. I don't know. It's taking a shot in the dark. He could strike out 45% of the time. Like, that is a realistic outcome for him. But I also think there is 18 homer, 25 stolen base upside there. And so he'll get a shot at some point. I don't think you should draft Zach Thien, to be honest. I think it's more of a, like, you'll keep your eye on Zach Thien, and if he shows any improvement in AAA, he's only 24, so he'll be 24 all year. So, like, there is upside there.
Awesome. At the price, it's hard to not want to take a chance, but we shall see. And then you have Kyle Karros down, who got the call last year, and then you nailed it in your comment here. So where are we at on him? Because, like, I feel like if they liked him, they might not have brought Willie Castro in.
Yeah, but Willie Castro can play second. Willie Castro can play over Jake. Like, they did some weird things with that roster when they traded for Julian and they brought in Willie Castro and they traded for Jake McCarthy. It was kind of like, okay, where do your prospects play? Where does Karros play? I was really disappointed because everything looked really good in the minor leagues. But I think it comes back to sometimes even you're not getting data on these players. And so, like, the bat speed just isn't very good. So, like, even if he's got the size to hit for power, like, he's probably not going to. The strikeout rate was higher than you'd want to see when he's at the major leagues. He only barreled the ball one time in 98 batted balls. So, like, you can see he's a guy who's more focused on just trying to make contact, and the contact rate wasn't very good. So, I mean, they might have seen enough. I think there is some upside here, like, last year in the minor leagues, he was hitting 301 before he got called up. In 2024, he hit 311. So, I mean, I think they're – and he's 6'5". So, like, you can talk yourself into there being more power there if the Rockies can figure out how to get him there. And there's enough skill in his profile to hit for decent average. Like, a ton of line drives, like I said, super consistent swing. Just simple approach. And so, like, you can talk yourself into him, but – like, now with the playing time situation, all the depth they've kind of added on the infield, it's just difficult to project him holding much of any value in 2026.
Yep, I'm with you there. He's a tough one to get behind this draft season. Last question I have for you. Don't need an actual prediction, but just I'll leave it at this. Do you think they finish better or worse than last year?
They have to finish better, right? I mean, they won 40. They have to finish better. They have to finish better.
Yes. Do you think they make it to 50, 55?
That's a good line.
50. Yeah.
50, I was going to say over. 55, I was going to say under.
I think it feels like right 52 over. Or something feels right about where they need to, where they're going to be for some reason. It's like the old joke, and it doesn't even pertain to the Rockies, obviously, for saying 52, but it was way back when, like, a manager used to say it's like 162 game season. So just take, say 100, and, you know, you should win. It's four. You should go at least 40 and 40. And it's whatever you do with the next 42. That's like, that's what decides if you're a good team or not. So, well, Rockies won 44. So I think we got our answer there. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. I always appreciate you joining me for this show. It's great to chat with you. And talk Rockies. I know it's not your squad, but you cover them well, and I appreciate it. You do a lot of great work. Like I told you before, when we first started doing this, I would see Matt's tweets going out there because I'm friends with Nick, and then Matt started doing more and more, and then It's just one day, like a Rockies prospect deal came out. So I slid into the DMs, like, hey, you want to preview him? Matt said yes. And here we are, a couple years later, still doing them. So thank you for that. Before we leave, let people know where they can find you and plug all your good work.
Yeah. So PitcherList, that's where all my articles go out. Dynasty team, all the content we put out there. Twitter at Heckman_Matt115. I post my articles there, retweet them at least after Nick posts them. I'll put out an occasional tweet here and there. Definitely not as good about it as I used to be, but I try to share some dynasty nuggets or just fantasy baseball nuggets out there as well on Twitter. So that's where you can find me.
Yep, check him out. Like I said, between him and Martin, it's at least one thing a day, if not multiple. So if you like your prospects, you can get them from these guys. I don't know the product. They're the up and coming crew, because like everyone knows, you know, the Jameses, the Welshes, the Crosses. Like, this is the next crew coming up, and I'm not saying they're behind them, but I mean they're the ones that
you're going to hear about.
You're going to hear a lot about. Because like I respect what you guys do. So the prospect game is not easy. It's a lot of work. A lot of work. So I leave it to all you guys. But again, thanks for joining, man. Appreciate it. And we will be chatting very soon, I have a feeling. So thank you very much. Everybody, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 834, your 2026 Rockies preview. Catch y'all next time.